Today, we're going to talk about little things that go a long way. Everyone, how's it going? Welcome to the 83rd episode of the Game Dev Field Guide. I'm your host, Zach Avelli. You can find me on Twitter at @_ZachAvelli_ and on Twitch at twitch.tv/ZachAvelli_. We also have an open community Discord full of good discussion, a strong community of beginner, intermediate, and expert game developers, and yeah, just a place with really good vibes and good information about game dev as a hobby and a craft in general. So I would strongly encourage you to go check that out. There's an open link to that in the show notes. And lastly, I want to mention that the latest demo update has come out for my game Mirror Throne. You can find Mirror Throne on Steam. Just search for Mirror Throne. There'll also be a link to it in the show notes. But yeah, if you want to give the game that I've been working on a try, go ahead and go play the free demo. I guess with all of that out of the way, let's move on over to the Game Dev Challenge. The Game Dev Challenge is a part of the show where I provide a prompt to the listeners, and it's supposed to be a short exercise so that you can kind of reinforce the things you learned from the show. The last Game Dev Challenge was actually all the way back from episode 81. And if you remember, episode 81 was an episode dedicated to escaping tutorial hell. The Game Dev Challenge for episode 81 was to design a small project that will help you escape slash avoid tutorial hell altogether. Remember that we talked about one of the best ways to stay out of tutorial hell is just to focus on finishing a really tiny project or a couple really tiny projects. And so yeah, there was tons of great submissions for this one. Lots of tiny projects and good ideas, but there can be only one winner, and the winner of the episode 81 Game Dev Challenge is Hedgepig. Hedgepig's post says, "I am very new to game development, but this is my story. I'm a very busy person, and I had 4 hours on Saturday. I had very little experience with code and art, think Hello World level of code, but decided I was going to make a game in 4 hours. I had to cut features and all the corners, but I finished in 3.5 hours. It was a single screen game where you just had to get from point A to point B. This is probably one of the more valuable sessions I've ever had, but I had to learn about creating windows, defining objects, changing the object on a button press, and triggering the congrats end game screen when the object was in a certain state." I think this is the perfect post that kind of highlights exactly what you should do to get out of tutorial hell, or the best way to really start learning, and that's just by doing and making small projects like this. Hedgepig had 4 hours, and they did everything they could to finish in that 4 hours. They cut entire features and a bunch of corners, but they finished a game in their allotted time, and they got past that initial hump of finishing just one game, which is a hump that a lot of people never get over. And as Hedgepig said, they had a complete game all the way from the beginning to the end game screen, and they learned all these tiny lessons, lessons about creating windows and defining objects and just moving something or changing an object on a button press. All of those little lessons are easy to learn in a small controlled environment like that, or at least easier than if you imagined you had like a giant MMO and you were trying to figure out those basics but also contextualize it in a giantly scoped project. So yeah, in just a little test environment like this, just a little project like this, it's much easier to learn these lessons. And then once you've done it once, like Hedgepig is going to know how to do this for the next game and get faster and better at it, and the next one and the next one, until they eventually have built up to a large project. So yeah, I'm really glad this post won. It got a bunch of votes, and rightly so. This was a really good example of, I think, the best way to learn. So yeah, congrats to Hedgepig for winning the episode 81 Game Dev Challenge. For episode 83, I want you to identify a force multiplier or little thing that goes a long way in one of your projects or a game that you've played, and you get bonus points if you assign it to a greater family or category, like I'm about to identify. For example, later we're going to talk about it. There's a category of easy wins or playing with fire, etc. Yeah, as I kind of alluded to, we're going to talk about little things that go a long way and kind of how to identify them. And by the end of this episode, I hope you are in the right mindset to identify those kinds of things and talk about them. And the Game Dev Challenge is the perfect place to talk about them. So yeah, just keep that in the back of your mind that the Game Dev Challenge is going to be the place you probably want to go after listening to this episode if it sparks an idea in your head. But I think all of that will make a lot more sense once we actually get into the episode. So if you're interested in participating in the next Game Dev Challenge, you can just go over to our community Discord and find the Game Dev Challenge channel and post it. And yeah, if it gets the most votes, I'll read it on the next episode. With the Game Dev Challenge out of the way, let's move on over to the body of today's episode. Today's episode is on a topic that I believe I've spoken about before. In fact, I know I've spoken about it before. And originally, actually, I wrote this episode as a part two. But when I went back to find part one, I couldn't find it. But like I said, I know I've talked about this topic a few times. You've probably heard me talk about this on previous episodes or streams or maybe just in general Discord chats. But I realized I've never done a full formal episode on it. The idea has always been scattered between all of those different channels. So yeah, I decided that today will be an official episode on a topic that we have visited maybe a few times in the past, but today we're going to kind of put it all into one place. And that topic is little things that go a long way. Sometimes I also refer to these as force multipliers, and the idea is that these are things that don't take very much effort or energy or money to do, but to the player, it looks like it took more energy, effort, or money, and is just like, in general, appreciated more. Oftentimes, these are little simple tricks that allow you to get more bang for your buck, or just improve the quality of your game for not that much energy. I think I use the word force multiplier because I think it's a good analogy or comparison, but I'm pretty sure that comes from like an idea in military strategy. It's like the idea that with a sword, one person will be able to fight one other person or maybe two, but with a machine gun, that one person can fight 100 people. Now, how does this apply to making games? Well, essentially, you're looking for things that multiply your effort, or at least look like it did to the person that's playing the game. For solo indie devs, it's an incredibly important thing to understand and recognize, because oftentimes you are only one person or a small group of people, but using little things that go a long way or force multipliers allows you or just you and your small team to achieve things that are much greater than you could otherwise do. And the good news is like weapon technology, game tools have evolved so much now to the point where force multipliers are basically better than they've ever been. I mean, in the past, we've talked a lot about AI tools and how it's sort of changing the face of game development right now. I still think we're in the early days of viability for those tools, but I do believe them to be in this category of force multiplication. You just have to kind of know how to use them effectively right now, but who knows in the future. And that whole discussion I don't think is really in the scope of today's episode, but it does lead us in a direction of more what I want to kind of talk about today and educate you on today, which is less on the tool side of little things that go a long way and more on the methods side of little things that go away or methods that force multiply. Because a force multiplier doesn't just have to be a tool. Sometimes it's a strategy or a decision or a design philosophy that allows you to get more for the effort. And I think those little things that go a long way are sometimes much harder to recognize, but also in some ways more beneficial. Don't get me wrong, like I said, we live in a golden age of force multiplying tools. simply having access to a game engine is a force multiplier. I mean, think about how much you can achieve as just one person with a modern game engine versus what an entire game development team could do in the 80s. To kind of go back to the military thing, back then they were using crossbows and today we have machine guns. But like I said, I think it's much more important to learn about the little things that go a long way in terms of methods. Because your competition or the standard of games expected is not the same as it was in the 80s. You're up against everyone else that also is using machine guns. Some people have a much bigger budget and can afford much fancier guns or shoot more of them at once. So the most valuable thing you can do is learn how you can stretch the thing that you have into something that is greater than your effort would otherwise get you. Now, don't get me wrong, putting in an extreme effort is a strategy that is going to work most of the time. It's just basically hard work generally leads to success. But there is a question of efficiency. Yes, I could probably make a really good game if I worked 18 hours every day and put everything I had into it for 25 years. I guarantee you I could make a really good game, but that would just be absolutely taxing. It would destroy my life doing that. It would destroy anyone trying to do that. And it's just not really a realistic approach. Learning little things that get you most of the way there or allow you to multiply your effort is a lot more efficient. Don't get me wrong, you're still going to have to work hard even with these things in mind, but it's going to make your hard work go a lot further and be a lot more realistic. It's going to allow you to stretch your comparably limited means. So yeah, I think that's why I want to put such an emphasis on learning force multiplying methods in game development and not the multiplying tools per se. So in thinking about the methods, the force multiplying kind of methods, it's kind of more of a way of thinking rather than knowing the exact things, but let's just name some exact things and then we'll get to the way of thinking through that. So in thinking about them, I came up with just a few categories that came to my mind. This is not an exhaustive list of all the things and all the exact strategies and all the categories. This is just kind of what came to me. And like I said, after we identify and talk about these things, maybe your own categories will come to you and your own examples will come to you and you'll be like, oh yeah, this was a force multiplying thing. And when that happens, you start to see them and that's when you start to be able to make use of these kinds of methods. Anyways, the three categories of little things or force multipliers that I've identified are easy wins, seemingly meaningless details, and playing with fire. Let's start with easy wins. These are sometimes things that always work, or they seem like they just are always a good idea. Sometimes they're specific to a game, like it's not going to work in this kind of game, but it will work in that one. But in general, they're low effort things that go much further with the player, and things that maybe you should always consider, or at least know about in general, just so, yeah, that, you know, you might spend, I don't know, 30 minutes implementing one of these things, and it's going to make your game much better as if you had spent 10 hours on it. Easy wins take many different kinds of forms and can be found in almost all places of game development, but I wanted to mention a few examples that I know about, and these are things that I kind of always try to consider a little bit. The first is, in some way, think about enabling physics or having things be physics enabled. Even just small things add so much to the game. Think about in Skyrim, for example, just being able to move the objects around in a relatively simple physics simulation. And actually, I don't know how their engine works, so maybe it is difficult for them, but let's speak broadly here. For most modern game engines, doing a simple physics simulation is not difficult. But yeah, just adding this adds so much. In Skyrim, there are entire mini-games and mechanics, some of which I'm not sure are intended, but they're all based on this physics sim. Look up cabbage bowling in Skyrim. I used to love watching, I think there were Rooster Teeth videos of people doing trick shots like throwing cabbages into buckets, but they were bouncing them off the roofs of houses or whatever. It was a whole trick shot mini game inside of Skyrim. It was really cool. I used to really love those. Of course, you have the classic bucket over the head stealing trick. Or you can just look at footage of someone using Fus Roda and you see the enemy like ragdoll backwards and there's loose objects flying all over the place. And it just adds so much to that. It's a simple physics simulation, but yeah, it just goes a lot further than I imagine it took to make, although I'm making a big assumption about how it works in specifically that engine. But in the engine you're using, like a modern engine, it's not that difficult. We mentioned ragdolls, and I think ragdolls would be like a sub, I don't know, easy win. The reason I'm calling it a sub, maybe it's like a one step above an easy win. They're a little bit harder to pull off, ragdolls are, depending on how complex the character rig is and how like accurate you need it to look. But it's one step up in difficulty from a simple physics sim, but it's also one step up in how cool it looks or how satisfying to the player it is. Throwing a ragdoll onto your enemies or making your enemies ragdoll when they die, it just is, I don't know, there's like a beauty there, a simplistic beauty that, I don't know, in most cases I think it goes further than the effort took to make it. Sometimes you can get away with even more abstract or even simpler physics sims, to the point where they're kind of only physics sims in the idea, but not actually in the execution. Think about being able to smash pots or cut grass in Zelda. I wouldn't say these are true physics sims, but they give the same sort of sense of satisfaction. They in themselves are very small parts of the game, and maybe weren't that hard to set up, but it's kind of become like a core part of a satisfaction about those games. Same thing goes for like dodge rolling into furniture and barrels and stuff in the Dark Souls series and breaking that stuff apart. It's a simple physics sim, but it's really satisfying. So yeah, the point is, I think that's an easy win. Something you should always kind of look for is if you can turn on the physics in some simple way, for your game, it usually results in some cheap effort fun. Okay, the next easy win is more in the category of emotional wins, but it's the idea of petting the dog. Now, I know we've talked about this before, but let's just go back to the golden rule of game design, which is, everyone say it with me, evoke an emotion. Okay, I know you all said that with me. And the person sitting next to you at work just listened to you say that out of nowhere and they think you're weird or something. But anyways, petting a dog is an emotion or experience that we are all familiar with. So when you allow the player to do it in a game, even as just a meaningless button press, it immediately evokes an emotion that pretty much all humans are familiar with. It's a super easy way to do that fundamental thing of emotion evoking. You literally can just have a button input that says, press X to pet dog, and then the player presses it and a little heart icon goes over it and maybe a dog bark. That does not take that long to set up, but it creates a much more emotionally strong moment for the player than compared to the effort it took to set up. You might spend hundreds of hours making sure your combat is just right, and then just add this as like a side thing, and you'll probably get lots of Steam reviews that are like, the combat's pretty good, but I could pet the dog. So this is a positive Steam review. So yeah, that's kind of an emotional thing that goes a longer way. Let's take it in a different direction and talk about an easy win for your game loop. I think a simple progression system can supercharge a game loop and is something that should always be considered because it is such an easy win when you're considering your game loop. The progression kind of helps the momentum of a macro game loop, and often progression can be done quite simply. Now, don't get me wrong, progression is done best when it's fully thought out and part of the design as a whole. But for some games, it might be good enough just to throw a few unlockables behind a simple point progression or level progression, and yeah, it's going to give you somewhat of the same feel. It's going to add a lot of replayability and one more timeness to your game if it's right for it. So that's something that I personally always consider. Now, there are a million more easy wins. I kind of stuck with various design ones because it's what I know best, but I'm sure there are other easy wins in the art side of things, or audio, or programming, or etc. I don't think they always have to be player-facing things. Sometimes they can even be internal processes that kind of lead to those easy wins through a level of like one layer deep. For example, an easy win that I try and do when I'm evaluating how well my game communicates or gives feedback to the player is that I look to see if there are at least two ways of telling the player something is happening. This could be something like a "you win" text and a sound that, you know, signifies you won, or text that something bad happened and a particle effect to bring the player's attention to that. Maybe it's just an animation and a sound. Whatever it is, it's an easy personal rule to just make sure that whenever I tell the player something, make sure there's two ways that it's saying that. It can be, like I said, text and a sound, or a particle effect and an animation, whatever it is. If I always look for two things, that's just an easy thing that I can do while I'm making my game, and it's going to ensure that the game communicates well to the player, and the player can appreciate that. Even though it had come from a one-layer deep internal process. It's not necessarily a player-facing thing, but the player feels the effort of it, even though the effort was quite simple. Okay, let's move on to the next category of force multipliers or things that go a long way, and this is meaningless details, or at least they're seemingly meaningless. These are things that don't even seem like your initial time is worth it. It feels wasted. It feels like you shouldn't be taking the time and effort to implement these things. And what they are details that probably not all players are going to see. But for the ones that do see it, it's going to make the game feel like it has a lot more heart and soul in it. Those people that do see it are sure to go out and talk about it and share it on the internet, and it be a memorable moment for them. And although you're making a minuscule thing for only some people who find it, it's a force multiplier because those who do find it, they're going to feel like they found a lot more. And like I said, it's going to create that memorable and shareable experience. So what exactly do I mean by these tiny details? Well, I think for the most memorable for me are details found in the Metal Gear Solid franchise. There's just so many attention to detail things in Metal Gear Solid that are seemingly there for no reason other than to be cool or interesting. Like I said, there are so many to go over, but some of them have like gameplay implications, like distracting guards with pinup girl posters. Some are cool but meaningless visual details, like when you shoot a bucket of ice cubes, the ice cubes that fall out melt in real time. And some are just so obscure and strange, I can't even believe they took the time to do it. Like in Metal Gear Solid 5, if you spend too long out in the field without returning to base for a shower, Snake starts to stink, and enemies you're trying to sneak around can smell you. That's just a weird detail because it's not like it doesn't happen enough for it to be a core mechanic. It's more like just a thing that can happen. It takes just long enough that most people are never going to get to that point. But it's just a weird detail that's included in Metal Gear Solid 5. But Metal Gear Solid is full of that kind of stuff. It's just really interesting. It's not, of course, the only game like that. Red Dead Redemption 2, for example, is full of those kind of tiny details. The Hitman series is kind of famous for them. One that I can think of is, I think it was Hitman. I remember people being really blown away by this at the time. But if you shot an aquarium, there was like a aquarium, and if you shot it, the aquarium water would drain down to where the bullet hole was. And at the time, I know that sounds really dumb, but at the time it was like, oh, this is an amazing fluid simulation. But it wasn't a fluid simulation at all. It was just a one-off visual effect that at the time was really cool. Even in my own games, I try and include these little details. For example, in Bounce Shot, there are always scientists watching you test the weapon on all the different levels. It's just kind of environmental dressing. But if you shoot the glass that they're behind, or an orb that you shoot just happens to bounce in that direction, the scientists play a special flinching animation that shows them actually reacting to what's going on. I guess my point with all that is that this little attention to detail stuff, it goes a long way, especially towards making a memorable moment. And it doesn't have to be something that takes a super long time or requires a ton of effort. In some way, maybe you might say that Red Dead Redemption 2 is not a good example of a force multiplier because adding in all those tiny details may have taken a really long time. And yeah, I think you might be right about that kind of thing, but remember, for your games, it can be just a simple, small attention to detail stuff. Something so small is just like putting someone's name on an item they own in the world or in the character, just to show, I don't know, that thing belongs to that character. Most people are not even going to zoom in on the model to know, but the people who do, it's going to be like, oh, this is so-and-so's sword or whatever, wherever the label is or however you tie that together. It can be really tiny and simple things like that that just give a little bit extra to the game. So yeah, when you're making your stuff, just look for opportunities to put in small details or fun little details like that. I promise if you do that, it's going to go a long way. It's going to feel like a force multiplier to the player because they're going to say to themselves, I can't believe the dev took enough time and care to add that. Okay, the last category I've identified today is a category of force multipliers or little things that I'm going to call playing with fire. Now, playing with fire force multipliers are usually easy things to do that have the intended effect of making something much better for a little work, but they have a huge chance at being overdone, especially in the hands of beginners. It's the kind of thing that you can tell makes something better right away, and so you just keep doing it more because you think more is better, and it ends up ruining the thing you're trying to do. It's kind of like a really potent spice in cooking. A little bit can go a long way and really change the flavor of a dish, but more than a little bit can start to ruin the whole thing. For my examples of these, I chose to pick mostly visual things, as the line between a little bit and too much is, I think, a little more clear with visual things. But just keep in mind when you identify a force multiplier of any kind, just keep in mind that it could be in this playing with fire category. And if it is, remember, you only need a little bit. So, what are my examples? Well, a classic playing with fire example, I think, is adding bloom to your game. If you don't know what bloom is, it's a post-processing effect that makes things look shinier. In Unity, it's really simple to add. It's a very simple setup, a checkbox, and an intensity slider. And that intensity slider is a real noob trap because like 98% of it in most cases shouldn't be used. Just a little bit of bloom makes things look vastly better, but if you use too much, it immediately looks blown out and your game looks very amateurish. And that line is very easy to cross. I think it's a rite of passage, actually. Every dev at some point discovers how to add bloom and then they way overdo it immediately before finding that balance of just enough. There are other visual things like this. In fact, in stream the other day at twitch.tv/Zachavelli_, I was streaming, I think I was doing some UI stuff or something like that, but we were talking about this idea of things that go, little things that go a long way, and I mentioned drop shadows on UI being a little thing that I think really makes UI look better. And someone mentioned that drop shadows are kind of like bloom, or kind of like the bloom of UI. Yes, they look nice when used correctly, but used incorrectly, it can start to look kind of bad. If you don't know what a drop shadow is, it's just like when a UI piece has a shadow. It can be text or an icon or a button, but what it does is it really makes the thing pop. It looks really nice when it's done well, and it's something that I've started to do in a lot of my UI designs. I've tried to get a little bit better. I think really in the last year and a half, I've gotten much better at making decent-looking UI. But yes, I could definitely see this effect being overdone. Anyways, I thought that was an interesting comparison. Bloom and drop shadows being in that same playing with fire vein. It would be cool if there was other things that we could identify. Maybe that'd be a good thing to do for the Game Dev Challenge, identify another Playing with Fire visual effect. Speaking of other things in the Playing with Fire category, another thing I wanted to mention was really dynamic camera movements in general, or even screen shake. I've said before how much of a difference screen shake can make, and how if you're looking to add some extra juice to your games, it's a great thing to add, but I do think it can be overdone. And the other thing about it is that the overdoneness of that line is different for every player. Some people may be really sensitive to jarring camera movements. I personally don't have a problem with screen shake too much, but a follow camera that's not dampened makes me incredibly nauseous, or a camera that jumps around a lot. Like I said, these dynamic camera effects and movements can add a ton of feel and polish to the game. And in a lot of modern engines, it's actually pretty easy to do. But just keep in mind that everyone has a different level of tolerance for these kinds of effects. And maybe you want to have an options menu that allows the player to adjust the dampening, the delay, or the intensity of the movements so that they can define the line of what is too much and what is just right. They can do that themselves. So yeah, we've gone through a few specific examples of what I mean by force multiplying methods or little things that go a long way. I think the categories really help recognize that. But what I want you to do, the main takeaway I want you to have, is recognizing the patterns, or recognizing what a force multiplier looks like, and seeing the philosophy of little things that go a long way. The skill here isn't so much memorizing the exact methods, although I think it does help when applied. For instance, the pet the dog thing, you can just know that in your mind. I have a dog in my game, we should have a way to pet it. But you could never do that for every single little thing that goes a long way. You can't physically memorize them all. What you should do instead is look at what a little thing looks like, or understand the philosophy of it. And once you understand what you're looking for, it becomes a lot easier to see them and apply them. And I think that skill and that takeaway is a powerful and necessary thing for any indie dev. So yeah, let's do a quick recap of what we talked about today. Today's episode was on little things that go a long way. I also call these things force multipliers. And that's based on the military strategy thing of you can fight one person with a sword, or you can fight 100 with a machine gun. It's an important thing for indie devs to be able to recognize, because often you are limited with it just being you or your small team. You're limited with your time and your effort and your money, and you need to find ways to multiply those things. We talked about how we live in a golden age of force multipliers as tools. Modern game engines, for example, allow you to do the work of an entire studio just 30, 40 years ago. What we focus more on in this episode was actually recognizing force multiplying methods, as there's a lot of power in being able to recognize those. I broke down some methods into a few categories. That is, easy wins, which are usually easy things that you can do with little downside. Easy wins often take many forms, but petting the dog and enabling simple physics were a few examples that we discussed. Next, we had meaningless details, which are things that at first seem like your time would be wasted on, but bring such memorable moments to those that discover them that it makes it worth it. The details in Metal Gear Solid franchise, for example, are good examples of that. And lastly, we talked about force multipliers in that Playing with Fire category. These little things are like a potent spice in cooking. They're good in small quantities, but easy to overdo, ruining the whole dish. I gave a few visual examples, like bloom and excessive camera movements. But yeah, remember, anytime you think you've identified a force multiplier, just double check or gut check with yourself and say, is this a Playing with Fire kind of thing? And lastly, I hope that the core lesson you leave with today is being able to recognize a little thing that goes a long way when you see it. I could never make an exhaustive list of all the categories and examples of little things, and even if I did, you could never memorize that and put it into your projects. Rather, I hope you learn to recognize what a little thing that goes a long way looks like so that you can recognize and exploit it in your own projects and use those things to your full potential and multiply your efforts. And I believe that that is an essential skill as an indie game dev. So yeah, I think that's gonna do it for me today. Thank you for listening to episode 83 of the Game Dev Field Guide. I know this episode came out like a little bit late. I've just been super busy with Mirror Throne. And I gotta say, I'm a game developer first. Even though I know that's like kind of, maybe it doesn't make sense. The podcast is more popular and successful than any game I've ever made. But I do feel like I'm a game developer first. I like to work on my games first and do the podcast second. It's not to say I don't value the podcast. I like doing the podcast too, but I'm just running out of time. I've got some other things going on, some that will be public soon. I've got a new style of content that I think you'll be listening and maybe even watching by the summer. So yeah, look forward to that. Go play Mirror Throne, my game I've been working on. There's free demo updates pretty much every month. I'm working on one that'll be out in probably like a week or two right now that's going to enable some multiplayer gameplay. So I'm really excited about that because I think that'll be really fun. And go participate in the Discord. Go into the episode discussion and let's talk about more categories of force multipliers. Or even better yet, enter your ideas into the Game Dev Challenge. If you're interested in doing that, there's a link to the open Discord. You can find it in the show notes. With that, I think I'm going to sign off. I have been Zachavelli. I'm still looking for a force multiplier on writing podcast episodes.